Welcome to another episode of Living the Beam, the Sacramento Kings podcast from the Kings Herald. I am your host, Greg Wissinger, joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Jill Adge and TJ Macias. First things first, it's International Women's Day and Jill's birthday. So happy birthday, Jill, and happy International Women's Day to both of you.
Thank you.
Since it's International Women's Day, I'd like to say that Gregory looks like a toenail and in a Jerry Seinfeld wig.
Well, I'm glad you got that out of your system, because now it's on to the agenda topics that I, the man, have set and that we're going to be going over. So I'll take over from here.
That was an impressive catch in the background too, TJ, I have to say.
Wait, did she catch it? Like, what?
Yeah, she did. She caught it.
Okay.
I was distracted too.
Yeah, for people listening at home, she threw the ball to her dog.
I was
trying to
all distracted.
She was barking and she caught it midair. So I was like, yeah, way to go. Because she just caught it and she looked at you like, okay, what now?
Sorry about that, folks.
It wouldn't be our show if we weren't distracted by dogs in the background. So,
Gracie's going to have a barking attack at some point. So, you know, it'll happen.
So let's go ahead and we'll jump right in. You know, the Kings have had, much like they have for pretty much the whole season, kind of an up and down last couple of weeks. So, you know, we'll get into some of the specific games, but just, you know, we'll start off with just kind of general thoughts. I mean, Jill, what has been your general feeling over the last couple of weeks since last we spoke?
First off, I just want to say shout out to Banzitos for yesterday, to Adam and Val. That was really cool. For anyone that doesn't know, they have the taco truck out there outside the arena. And it was just a really cool vibe and atmosphere. And Rasay was out there calling out numbers and was in the truck helping them out. You know, and we saw Deeran went out and got his two tacos that he asked for after the game. But and then he unveiled his Curry Banzito shoes, which was really cool. But it's, to me, that's just very much like Sacramento, right? Like that whole thing started because of social media and, you know, Adam tweeting out that Fox was going to be an all-star every day for like 5 years. And then it finally happened. But like that, you know, grew a friendship there. And so that, you know, I mean, it's just very Sacramento in that how connected, right, everything is. And we all see how connected Rasay is everywhere in this community, and whether it be online or off. And so even just outside of basketball, just want to say how extremely lucky I think we are to have a star like that. You know what I mean? Like representing your community and your team when you just see so many instances in the sports world and in the world in general of just not good people, like having, you know, your forefront of, you know, as just a good family, you know, good people. So shout out to that. And, you know, Adam and Val have been working really hard on that. So it was cool to see it all come together, and their tacos are extremely good. So if you ever, you know, are out and see them and have an opportunity to try them, do it. Because what can go wrong with basketball and tacos, right? Like we were beams and tacos, like it was perfect. So just to start off there. And then we got the birthday beam yesterday, so I was excited about that. It was scary for a while, but you know, for the last minute it turned back and exciting. And so anyone on Twitter, go find Brendan's feed, because he has the audio of the place going crazy. I mean, to me, it was, the sound of that was right back into similar to the playoffs. Like, I mean, the place just went nuts, because we know how important every game is at this point of the season in March. And I haven't heard it as loud as that in, you know, since probably last April. You know, we're always loud, but it definitely went to another level, I feel like. And everyone was jumping up and down and just high-fiving each other and going crazy. So it's always fun to get to experience that. The loss to Chicago, you know, what can you say? Like, it's things that we've seen a lot this year. And I'll keep saying this. It's not just the Kings. Like, it's everyone. And I'm not, that's not an excuse or anything. I'm just saying, like, that's the NBA this year and literally why there's five or six teams, you know, going after, you know, that positioning in the West right now, because it's every night someone is doing this. If it's not the Kings, someone else is doing this. The Warriors did it yesterday. OKC did it the other day to the Lakers. We saw the Celtics do it to the Cavs. The Pelicans are up 30 something today, and it got down to six, you know, with less than 3 minutes left in the game today. So I'm just, as an overall whole, like, it's happening. And unfortunately for the Kings, like, for as many times it's happened, had you not let it happen or, you know, stopped it, that's where you could be maybe a four seed right now. And that's where, you know, it's frustrating as a fan. And I'm sure it's frustrating as the team, because we see them saying the same thing over and over, like, we have to figure this out. And it's just, it's one of those things that for whatever reason this season, they're just not able to do it. It took two crazy plays yesterday at the end of the game and under a minute left for them to pull that one out. Otherwise, it would have been another one of those. Another one. I don't know what it is that when they hit 20, there she goes. When they hit 20, it's like a kryptonite thing. And all of a sudden they can't make a shot anymore, and then they can't stop anything. And so with the improvement of threes and what San Antonio was shooting like 50% from three yesterday, it just didn't take very much for them to come back from it. And so in those terms, it's not that surprising that, you know, a 15, 20 point lead can be evaporated. And, you know, if you don't make a shot four times and they make four threes in a row, like, okay, here we go. It's a whole new game again. And that's kind of what happened with how San Antonio was shooting. So, well,
to your point about,
but yeah, I think, like you said, this week was just a accumulation, I think, of kind of the season as a whole of the roller coaster up and downs. But they ended it 2-1. So, you know, I'll take it. Now they just have to take care of business on Sunday and then Tuesday and keep it going. But please, like, just handle it at home, right? Like, handle it at home. Because post All-Star break, you're 2-2 at home. And you have a crap load of home games coming up. Like, that needs to turn itself around.
I was going to say, I think part of the reason that crowd was so into it against the Spurs is that, yeah, we've seen so many of those losses, not just to a bad team or a team missing key players or whatever, but so many of them have been at home. Like, it's been a weird thing. So I think people were just kind of, you know, maybe a little more desperate for that win at home where you can celebrate and go out and see the beam and do all those things. So I think that probably played a factor. TJ, what about you? What's kind of been at the top of your mind the last couple of weeks as far as the Kings go?
Sorry, you will hear Aria in the background because she's an ass and she just did that. I'm actually going to shout out Banzitos and Adam and Val too, just because I was bragging to my work today at McClatchy about everything that, you know, Adam has done in the past 8 years since, like, both Jill and I have known him. He's been working his ass off trying to get a restaurant open and then, like, being screwed over a couple times from, you know, different partners he set up with. And he kept this quiet for a long time. The food truck, starting Banzitos with the food truck. And Fox, you know, him kind of teaming up with Fox and Rosé. And we don't even have to pry it out of him. Like, he won't say crap to us. And, like, Jill and I are pretty close to him, so he'll give little tidbits here and there. But we actually don't know, like, how close he is until something like this happens. And so last night, we were not only just so proud of him, we were also roasting him in
yep.
because of the shoes and everything, because we were so excited for him. But I believe, like, what was it? Fox lost his shoe during the first quarter, I think, or like it slipped out. And so he changed his shoes. And so we all started roasting Adam, saying, you know, it's your fault if they lose, if your fault if he snaps his ankle, things like that. But he ended up wearing the shoes again at in the last half. And Adam was just working through the whole thing, and he really didn't even notice. He told me this morning that he's like, how was it at the game last night, and how is everybody reacting to it? I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Did you not see like the shoes, the like Fox's posts, everything like that? And he had sent that picture of him and Fox. And it's such an incredible moment for both him and his fiance, because
so deserved.
Yes. They have worked their asses off. And Adam is, anybody who knows Adam, who has met him, he is a genuinely good person. So it's so easy to see like Fox and Rosé like radiate towards him, because he's just that good of a human being. And it's hard not to like him or respect him, and especially his work ethic in that sense. So it was like the happiest moment for all of us who are friends with him or have been following him to see last night like a dream come true, and then him treat it so in a modest fashion. And like you don't see people like that too often, especially in the sports business or in this kind of business, in the restaurant business. And like even my teammates at McClatchy were like, this is rare. And for Fox especially, this is how much, you know, players love the community of Sacramento. People joke about players coming here. They have for years. We've always been the butt of jokes. But this fan base and this community is so loved by this franchise. And it shows, you know, through all the jokes, through everything. And especially like this with Adam and with Fox and Rosé, it proves it tenfold. As for the Kings, last night I had to get almost to the point of blackout drunk, because blowing the 20-point lead, like towards the end, I was like hiding behind my dog, for God's sakes. And one thing that stood out to me, like Jill, you were there, and so it was like Chris Lopez. The booing, did Monk like scold all y'all? What happened at that first?
He did, yeah. So it happened during the timeout, when like right when San Antonio caught up, but it ended pretty quick because then they started putting up the, you know, like the chant thing. And I will keep saying this, like it's not like the whole place boos. It's like you have the certain section that does it, and like you can't do anything about it. Like they did what they did, but then it ended within like 10 seconds. Like it wasn't like this prolonged like thing. And I know like Monk hates it, and I know and I get it. But my thing is like, this is sports. There is not a fan. There is not a sports team anywhere that has not had any kind of boo at some point, you know, like regardless, whatever it is. I don't agree with it, but it happens. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and again, there's nothing you can do about it. But again, if you're going to go, if you go to Philly, go to Boston, go to these other places, like they will boo you, and they'll boo you for a minute straight. Like, it's not like we had a 10 second thing, but yeah, it was the end. It was when he was lighting the beam, and he just reiterated like, hey, I don't like that. We feed off of you guys, so please just keep it up. But I will also say, like, they came out kind of fired up after they got a little bit of the boost. So, you know what I mean? It was kind of like, in a sense, did it wake you up? Because I know they felt the same way that we all did. Like, it was the please not again. And so I get it from their perspective, as they want us to pump them up. But like, we were doing that all game too. So it's to an extent, it's, you know what I mean? Like, these are paying people. And as I always say, fan how you want to fan. These people are going to do whatever they want to do. But I just want to reiterate, for the ones that weren't there, like, it wasn't a big thing, which is why I laughed and it got like blown into what it was, because then all day people were like putting up the polls of should you boo or not boo. And I'm just like, what do we do? Like, why are we feeding into this? Like, to me, it reminded of how people took the players only meeting and ran with it. It was just like, we're going to throw this talking point, you know, like everywhere and see where it sticks. And it was like, why are we still talking about this 24 hours later? Like, what do we do? What's the thing? And people were going extreme, like, he's not going to sign here in free agency because of the boos. And I'm just like, come on. Because even in his post-game press conference, then he reiterated, I get why people did it. It's just something I don't like, but I get why they did it because we felt the same way. So like, but people ignored that part, you know, that it was just, and I tweeted the laughing emoji of him calling people out, but I didn't think that it was going to like turn into this.
Turn it up.
My God. You know,
I saw it. I only saw it just all of a sudden blow up on Twitter. And like, I was waiting for the post game on League Pass and it didn't come on, so I didn't see it, and just everyone was like pissed off, and it's not, I mean, come on, everyone fucking,
but then yeah places. And then media made a point to ask about it too, and it's like, if you don't ask about it, like, it's not going to be a thing. How about let's just talk about the other great stuff? And hey, did you hear how loud it was when it turned around? You know what I mean? Like, we don't need to talk about how did it feel that you got booed for less than 10 seconds last night.
You all know that.
What are we doing?
Is going to bring it up.
Like, what are we doing? Come on.
Just like, I just brought it up to you. I'm going to be that asshole. but yeah, it's a given. It happened in everywhere. And it was all over just my Twitter feed last night. And I was like, all right. And then I passed out and everything was hunky-dory.
That's why I was more shocked that when I woke up this morning, it was still there.
It was a talking point to that.
Oh my God. And I had been tagged in some of the responses of people going crazy of like the free agency stuff. And I was just like, the one thing I do like of the part of Twitter, you can say leave conversation, where it's like, I don't want to be a part of this. Like, I don't like, stop. Like,
so I was hearing that this morning, and then I was also like, people were texting me, what's going on with Murray's face? Like, why? Like, they pan over to him and all of a sudden you see resting bitch face. And like, I think it was one of my editors who was like, is he okay? Is he like, is he happy? Did you know,
oh, that's funny.
Like, what's going on with Keegan Murray's face? I'm like, I'm not in the guy's speed dial. I have no idea what's going on with him. Maybe they just pan over to him at like the wrong time.
Well, because they know. Well, and for anyone that watches consistently, you're going to know that's Keegan Murray's resting face.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with him. Like
you, and that's you look the great at the part pictures
about,
of
that's
him.
The great part about him is, you know, like, that's just it.
You look at the pictures of him in the locker room with the group photos, and he has the same expression. It's like, that is his natural face, right? Like, that for all we know is his happy face. So let's go with that. So it's either that or what Monk said to the crowd last night. And, you know, other than this great win that we had, but, you know, oh yes, that's what my thoughts are on it, Greg.
Well, and I think we all kind of know the media game and kind of what's actually happening is that all the talking points, because the Kings keep doing the same thing over and over, like, it's all been hashed to death at this point. Like, it's difficult to come up with a new angle. So it's like, aha, that will fill 4 hours of airtime tomorrow. Let's do this. You know, like, I mean, that's the gig, right? Like, you come,
but
you
it always
find more lines
torpedoing and, like, in bad ways. And it's like, why? Like, you did it to yourself. Why? Like, why do we do this?
But I mean, I think the other part of it is that realistically, like, it's not like you can like discuss what a win does for the standings, because 2 hours later the standings have changed. Like, you know, if we look at the West right now, there's like two clear lines, right? Like, so there's the top four, you know, Thunder, Wolves, Nuggets, Clippers. That top four, the order may change, but it's going to be those four up top. Then from 5 to 10, you've got a bunch of teams that are all just in a dogfight for positioning, but it's going to be those teams. Like, the bottom five in the West, none of those teams are catching. and none of the teams in 5 to 10 look like they're going to fall out. Like, so kind of the tiers are set. The final order will get decided, but there's no point in picking that apart. So there's not a whole lot else to talk about for the last 20 games. Like, the last like two or three games will matter a lot for final seeding, and then you'll have an idea of what they actually do. But right now it's just that constant discussion of every game matters, but they're all like, all the games are going kind of the same way, where you have a big lead and then you blow it, or you start with a big deficit and then you come back from it. And like, so even the good games, even the good wins, like, follow the same pattern. And there's only so many times you can talk about that pattern before you're tired of it. Like,
right. And to your point too, these teams, like, the, even their last 10 records are all right there with each other, whether it be 5-5, 6-4, and 7-3. Like, there's nothing outside of that in when it comes to 4 down to 10. And I only bring up the Clippers because of the rest situation, and they're 5-5 right now. And they had to have a comeback yesterday. I think it was yesterday. Not today, but I think it was yesterday. They had a double digit deficit that they had to come back from. I think it was against the Rockets. But it's like, outside of the Pelicans, maybe, because they're 7-3, like, no one's clearly taking over anything. We're, you know, I will say the Warriors were 7-3, but Curry's now injured and they're saying he could maybe miss a couple games. So you just don't know there.
And you know, I don't want to say
you're dealing with the Booker thing, that it's just like, but it's generally right there. Yeah. Like, none of them outside maybe the Pelicans, who are 7-3 and just playing offensively and defensively, just their best ball right now, I would say. Outside of them, no one to me is like, else is, you know, where you say grab the bull by the horn, like taking over, in the sense of like, they're going to run away with it.
Yeah. And I don't mean to say that the standings are 100% guaranteed locked. It's just kind of, there's some pretty clear lines and it'd be more surprising. But yeah, I mean, the Clippers could run off a losing streak. I mean, and, you know, the Pelicans could have a win streak. I mean, like, one streak, good or bad, could really move some teams.
Those two might flip-flop, but right, just because of those circumstances. Like, yeah, had the, again, with the Clippers, right? It's that, it's always them being healthy. And we saw them pull out the win, so maybe they will be fine. It's just one of those things where it's seeing prolonged without rest, like, how's that going to impact them, with the Pelicans kind of playing their best ball. But to your point though, yes, I mean, it's essentially 4-5, you know, 2-10, it's, they're there. It's just, where are the drops and rises going to come from, if they even happen, right? It could very well stay how it is, you know, when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I do think it seems like the vibes around the Clippers are maybe a little tenuous right now. It seems like Harden's maybe through his honeymoon phase. You know, he had a solid 4 months. You know, it's most you can ever ask for him post a trade. You know, he'll be happy for 4 months before he starts getting mad at everyone. Paul George been in a bit of a slump since Kawhi's extension. Like, yeah, just some interesting vibes there. Like, they're still playing well enough. I mean, they're still 5-5 in their last 10.
Right. And this is where it gets important for them, right? Like, this is to them, them, it's always, you know, great, everything up until this point. Now it's, can you finish it out? And, exactly, you know, they were playing like one of the best teams for a huge part of the season, but it now is getting to March, April, May. Can it continue? And that's just always been the vibe with them. And it's almost like them not getting that freeze up of, you know, where you get in your head and it's like, similar to the Kings with these things, like, here we go again. Like, you know, how are we going to keep doing this? So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that fares out. You know, and we're even seeing the Timberwolves right now without Kat. I mean, and how that whole thing is going to play out now.
Yeah, I was gonna
say, close to beating the Cavs today, but they lost. But having Naz Reid come in is a great backup, I would say. He could be a starting center for teams. And the fact that he didn't even try free agency and just flat out sign with them was such a godsend to that team, of luck, that it's, you know, they were 7-3 in the last 10. And now it's, you know, what's going to happen without that. So,
I mean, I think the injuries are a big storyline across the Western Conference right now. I mean, Karl Anthony Towns is out for a while. The Clippers, like you mentioned, Westbrook is out. So the Suns are dealing with Booker, and you know, Golden State, Curry's out at least a game, but it sounds like it could be longer. Lakers, you know, LeBron, you know, he missed tonight's game. We're recording this on Friday night.
His was the ankle, that same ankle that's been bothering him. Yeah.
Yeah.
So rumor mill started here the other day. I also cover real estate for McClatchy, and Leonard is selling his condo, which is like right across the street. He just put it up on the market. So of course at work, that's creating a stir of what's going on and why he put that on the market, and immediately like firestorms going on, you know, him being unhappy or all that. And I'm like, they have apartments and condos right across the stadium. Of course, you know, the things are going in and out of the off of the real estate market, especially with a lot of players who put their houses up for sale, and then that coinciding with troubles with the team and things like that. So I just thought it was hilarious when that landed on my desk this week that it was up. But I have to say, his penthouse is fucking gorgeous.
I bet. Isn't it next season that their new arena opens?
Yes. And so
my first thought was, sense. I just assumed that he would be moving closer to that.
But and damn, his view. The city center.
Oh,
his
I bet.
His view is fucking
and get
gorgeous.
Get your extra money while you're at it.
Exactly. But he's actually taking a loss on it. Like, I think he bought it a couple years ago, and I think it's now maybe about half a mil less.
So maybe it's don't lose any more money on it.
Exactly. And so, people freak out and stuff like that. But I was more intrigued by the fact that how fucking, like, his fucking view. And the fact that I'm pretty sure I can see it from, like, my view outside of my bedroom. His apartment, because it's, I'm not saying where it is, but it's close by.
Yeah.
I just had to throw that in there. I don't know why.
No, it's always interesting, right? I mean, when that stuff happens, it's... it does make a stir that
fans take it overboard, and of course it doesn't help when I try to stir the pot and putting it in an article about, oh hey, this is on the market right now, what's going on with Clippers fans.
So TJ's the media who drums up a non-story for the news cycle that we were just complaining about. So
go fuck yourself. International Women's Day. You can't make fun of me right now.
And yet I am.
Bite me.
Let's shift back to the Kings. So one thing I do think is worth highlighting, because I think it's a positive development, and I'm hoping it continues, but we've actually seen some surprising play from the bench that hasn't been there most of the year, specifically looking at Davion Mitchell, Keon Ellis, and Alex Lynn when Mike Brown sees fit to play him. Yeah, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know that, you know, kind of the different, you know, five-man units. I know the one with, you know, Ellis and Monk and Davion has been pretty effective. You know, different combinations. Oh,
it's like offensive it's crazy rating effective. Of like 123 and like defense of like 105 to 108 or something like that. Like, it's very noticeable. Yeah.
I didn't have the numbers because I knew Jill
three
would
or four
notice.
Games. Yeah. But yeah, no, to your point, it's noticeable that three-man lineup, like, it since he started playing Ellis with those other two, it's completely opened it up the last three, four games. And it was noticeable that one game Ellis did not play in, was it Chicago?
Chicago.
Was it that one that they lost? Yeah. And they didn't stop anyone, and the bench had trouble scoring. So it was, you kind of wish it would have happened there, because it worked the other three games out of the four that, but you have to hope that it, that's been recognized at this point.
Mike Brown is a very scientific person. He wanted a control sample in the middle of, you know, some, he, you know, he's just, he's methodical. I admire it, you know. I did want to do a quick shout out to Deucemo. They've been doing a great job on the post game shows and all that. But when Deuce just like drained of energy is like talking to Malik Monk and goes, can you guys just please start making some free throws and stop giving me a heart attack?
And Malik was like, Mo, yeah, I'm trying, man. I feel the same way.
Didn't Mo like post footage of like Deuce freaking out during the game last night? And he's like,
that's why we need, when Deuce is on it, we need a Deuce cam, because he's literally doing what we all do, where he's the throwing the hands up, the the like
that's been happening, like, spans, you know, since
pulling the hair.
Like, we were children, like, doing that. It's like you feel that in your soul when you watch that.
Yep. But to your point too, with the offensive spark where you were talking about the bench, but the Kings as a whole since All-Star break, right, they're 5-2, but they have the second best offensive rating right now. Where we've seen, right, crazy numbers offensively, you know, and for the season as a whole, I think the top one is 127, I think. And since All-Star break, it's Boston at number one at 125. Then it's followed by the Kings at 119. So 119.9. So we're really close to that 120 mark. And then it's 118 and goes down. But I will say post All-Star break, we are seeing a increase, and I think that probably has to do also with Fox just getting 30 pieces almost nightly, knock on wood, that's, you know, kind of helped that come back up. I'm not even going to bring up the defensive rating because it's not good, and I'm sure we are 0.2 less than the offensive rating is our defensive rating.
You know what, All-Star break. You know what I'll say about that though? It's going back to what was effective last season. Like,
true
bad defense, really great offense, as opposed to
on the road.
So defense and so often, like, I don't know, it's more fun to score in bunches and give up a bunch of points. Like,
for who? You?
Defense is for nerds. I've said it for years now.
Oh, wow. All right. Now let's isolate the analytics geeks and all that shit.
Okay. But if you had to guess what their defensive rating is on the road versus at home post All-Star break, what would you think it was?
Oh, I have no idea. I'm sure it's something way better or way worse than I would expect based on the framing of your question.
Yeah, like negative 30%. We're going there just based on your phrasing.
So at home, the defensive rating is worst in the league, number 30, at 123.4. We're putting up 121.4 offense rating. Defense, it's 123.4, which I always laughed at, like, why wouldn't free agents want to come here? Because they shoot the hell out of the ball when they're at Golden 1. Like, it's ridiculous how good other teams shoot here.
If you come play in Sacramento, you don't get to play against the Kings defense.
I know. That's true. But so many of them say they like the atmosphere and they like the lighting and things like that. Like, it's just, it's one of those things. But their defensive rating on the road is 116. That's like a 10-point swing.
Wait, maybe our lighting is distracting them from, like, wait a minute. They like the lighting here. That's what kills me.
Yeah, that it's like when they get home, it's like just expected. You know what I mean? Like that they'll have it and they don't necessarily like step on it. But yeah, I just thought that was weird. That it was that much of a difference between,
like, that. That's when we have to start away. Looking at what is going on in our arena that is making our defense when it comes to that side of the court.
But also, if you're going to talk about booze, you're putting up, again, the worst defensive rating in the league at home. And you're averaging, your defensive rating is worse at home than your offensive rating is at home right now post All-Star break.
Yeah, the defense is frustrating. I always go back to defenses for nerds. Just, you know, score a bunch of points and everything will be fine. But it would be nice to see a few more stops. And
to but your it point, is like, if your offensive rating at home is better than
right,
your defensive rating, and your it's so bad that it's even your 121, it's not better.
Right. That's where it becomes an issue. Like, yeah, at a certain point, you do need to like guard someone, at least stand in front of them.
But I will say the numbers with Keon, again, are better. So, like, that's an improvement because there was two games of part of this that Keon was not a part of. So, you know, keep that, you know, frame of reference too, that in the games that, you know, at least he's playing a little bit more, it's a little bit better.
And I do want to go back and also shout out Davion Mitchell, because I mean, I've been very critical of him the last couple of years because he has not developed the way that the Kings wanted. And it's such a small sample that it's not something you can say is reliable and that it's there at this point, but he's been shooting lights out the last couple of weeks. I mean, it's been really game changing to have him off the bench where he's able to contribute offensively. And once he starts hitting some shots and the defense can't just leave him wide open, then that opens up opportunities for him to get to the rim and, you know, use his speed and his cutting, because he can do those other things. It's just really hard for him to do if defenses can give him 5 feet of space around the arcs. But it's been nice to see him kind of coming along and playing a bit better as well.
Yeah, to me, it's the confidence is noticeable. It's like, especially watching in person, like I feel like he's playing kind of with a different swag in that sense. And even him on the bench, like you're seeing, to me, it's even more so coming out. And I mean, that's nothing even negatively to him either. And I see some people, you know, almost even saying, well, you know, I feel like he's doing that because it's only because Mike Brown solidified his role again. I don't think that. I think it's because he's generally playing well, that the confidence is there, because there have been times where his role was solidified and it didn't make a difference necessarily in how seeing that swagger, right? Like, and it's no surprise when you see guys playing well, they play with a different attitude. It's, yeah, you're not going to stop me and I can do whatever I want. And to me, his defense is that much better when his offense is on too. Like, I know we just always assume that his defense was always going to be there regardless of the offense, but to me, his defense steps up even more when his offensive game is there. And it kind of reminds me of that moment with Fox and the Clippers, like when it was the, you know, he got pumped up and was like that. To me, I feel like Davion's playing like that on both ends of the floor. And it's one of those things that you can just, it's noticeable and you can see.
I mean, it's an old cliche, but I mean, you see a couple shots go down and suddenly they all start falling, right? Like it just, you know, the basket gets bigger when you're not stressed about how many you've missed in a row. Like it's kind of the antithesis of what's happened with Kevin Huerter this season, right? Like he's been very much in his head where he, you know, has had struggles. And then it translates on the other side with, you know, a crappy foul or, you know, whatever it is. So you kind of take, or Malik Monk and his free throw, same thing, right? Like it all, I mean, so much of the game is still mental and they are still people and, you know, the ebbs and flows happen. But I just wanted to make sure we brought up Davion because I've definitely been critical of him. And 100%. I always want to make sure that I'm also giving the guys props when they are doing well, because, you know, that's all I ever want is, you know, if I'm critical of a guy, it's just because I want him to be better than what he's doing.
Well, and I think people take, there is an extreme that just because you criticize someone, people assume that you just hate someone or don't ever want them to do well. Like, no, they're on your team. You want them to play well. Like, no one's not rooting for anybody, because them playing well and being better makes everybody else better and us happy as fans. And you know what I mean? Like the team as a whole. So I know exactly what you mean. And I always kind of hate that other side of it where it's like, how dare you, you know, critique someone because that means you're anti, you know, and it's, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing I would love more than for Chris Duarte to suddenly become like the second coming of Michael Jordan or something. Like, I wouldn't care that it was Chris Duarte. Like, be good for the Kings and I love you. That's all I want. Speaking of players being really good for the Kings, I feel like it almost gets overlooked and not talked about enough at this point. Just how absurd Sabonis has been for like 3 straight months now. I just pulled up his number.
It's wild. Yeah.
It's insane. I just pulled up his number just from the start of the year.
The fact that he wasn't, you know, an all-star is illegal. That's criminal, considering if anybody who watches him, Like how? That pisses me off.
Yeah, to your point too, would he be the first player to be on an All-NBA team but not an All-Star? Like, has anyone looked at that? Like, if that happens? And I wonder that back when it happened. And I mean, I'm assuming no one's going to bring it up unless it actually happens. But it's still wild to me. And since the start of the year, I don't know if you have that stat in front of you. Since January 1, he's leading the league in rebounds and assists. And it's like not even close, right?
Yeah, I don't have Beswell reference tweeted it out earlier today. I don't have it in front of me. But yeah, the gap was like 40 or 50 assists and rebounds to the second place guy. Like, he's way out in front. And even just looking at the averages. So since January 1st, Sabonis is averaging 20.6 points, 14.7 rebounds, 9.4 assists, a steal, half a block, 50% from three, 62.6% from the field overall. Like, I mean, hasn't missed a game. Like, the guy is just on an absolute tear. And to me, the impressive one was really that Lakers game the other night. So he started off rough. I mean, he couldn't buy a bucket. He was not in rhythm, wasn't getting the calls he wanted. And we've seen in the past where that really throws the Kings off, him especially. Where, like last year, and granted, he was playing with a broken thumb and all that, but you know, sometimes when he got in those early struggles, he would kind of step back or shrink back a little bit from the moment. And he just kept going at it and ended up with a monster triple-double. Like, it's just a whole nother level that he's playing at this year, and it's really special to see. And we're kind of spoiled that, like, on any given night, Fox can make that seem irrelevant because Fox is doing something else equally incredible. Like, just that 1-2 combo of Sabonis, who is so consistent and so dominant down low. And it's just, I don't have much else to say. I just want to make sure that we're celebrating it, because I feel like it almost gets lost because it is so consistent at this point.
No, 100%. And I think it's either Rasay or Fox that will say plenty of times post game that, like, I never want to take for granted, right, what Sabonis does. And I don't know if anybody saw, but Clutch Sports got a photo of Sabonis and Fox at the Laker game, and they were slapping hands, but they got it at the exact time that it's like almost like they're walking, holding hands. And Rasay tweeted out and said they were basketball soulmates, and that Fox gives Sabonis's wife a run for money, and like, who's obsessed with him more? And I just love that. Like, he just genuinely loves him. But to your point too, the numbers of what it was for rebounds since January 1st, 456 rebounds. The next one below that is Rudy Gobert at 411. And then number three is Jared Allen at 356. So Sabonis is at 456. The third best rebounder since January 1 is 100 rebounds less than Sabonis at 356. So when it comes to assists, he's at 290. The next one is Tyus Jones at 272 and Luka at 260. So he has 30 more assists than Luka at number three. And 100 more rebounds than Jared Allen, who was number three. So just in that sense, like, it's completely wild what he's doing. And people were even giving the whole thing of, oh, well, he wasn't scoring, you know, his average wasn't at 20 points. Well, yeah, you can't say that anymore either. Like, he's just taking away like anything that anyone like tried to say, and is just like, yep. By, like, I'm moving past that and taking it away.
Yeah, the other thing that's absurd is, I mean, last year was a career best year for Sabonis as far as, yeah, everything except points. He had scored more points like once in his career. But last season he was at, you know, 19 points, 12 rebounds, and I'm rounding down on these, so 19, 12, and 7 assists. This year he's at 20, 13 and 8. He's like a full number ahead in every category for the main three categories. Like, it's And that's on the season average. Obviously, it's been higher the last couple of months. It's just absurd what he's doing right now.
What he can do with two hands. The fact that he even did that last year with a broken thumb for like almost the whole year, it's still wild. And then to see him doing this, you know, like outside of that. And there are multiple times during the game, like he's grabbing his fingers, he's grabbing his hand, and I'm just going, no. Like, and he ends up being okay. But it's like, I mean, we're seeing him constantly hit in the face. Like, I mean, you see how red his arms are constantly because he's just getting whacked. But my favorite one was the Victor one where he had a full palm on Sabonis's face. And there was no foul call, but it's just like, this dude is getting hit like this every game, doesn't get a technical, doesn't cry about it, and just keeps like delivering in every aspect that it, you know, it's just, it's wild.
I come from the generation where it's all floppers and things like that. And of course we have our share of that there, but he can get majorly mauled and just make, you know, a crease in his forehead, and that's about it. And it's really cool to see that. Arya,
or like he'll throw his arm up at the ref as he's like running back, but he's like sprinting back as he's doing
exactly.
It. Like,
exactly.
Or he's like going as he's running back.
Exactly. And you know, oh, go ahead, Greg.
Oh no, I was just gonna say. So my one thing is, I actually do think that Sabonis reacts a little too much to getting hit. Like, everyone in the NBA gets hit a ton. Like,
Greg said that he reminds him of Luka. Don't hear what you're saying.
I think that there's times when he, you know, needs to just roll with it a little bit more. I think he gets, I do appreciate what you said, that, like, he will complain as he's in a full sprint back. He's not doing the Boogie Cousins thing where he's standing down there berating a ref and the play's already gone on. Like, he's not doing.
But if I'm getting a full Victor palm to the face, like, I can get why he yells about it.
Really do appreciate it. Get it too. Yes, I'm not saying he's not getting hit. I'm saying I think there's times he maybe overreacts a little bit to the hits, and I'm not saying they shouldn't be
compared to other people in the league.
I'm just saying, like.
But my thing is, how else are you supposed to like make it a point that it's like, keep looking at this? That's my biggest thing, is I get what you're saying to an extent, but also like, you have to keep pointing out to them all game that it's just like, this is happening. Just the same way that they're doing the like, he's giving us elbows, he's giving us shoulders, like, that it's, no, I mean, it's kind of what they do, but I get you. But I also think some of it too is frustration if he misses a bunny, that it's just like, you know, where it looks like he's yelling at the ref, but really he's doing this to himself. Like, he tapped his head, like, come the F on.
But you are right. Like, in the modern NBA, especially, like, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? Like, I mean, the Lakers had more than double the free throws as the Kings, and they were complaining the entire fourth quarter and post game about not getting any foul calls. Like, I mean, like,
13 more shots.
That's just the state of the modern NBA. The modern NBA, like, you have to complain and whine to get the rest to pay attention. I mean, we've seen it with Fox so many times, right? Like, where he's telling the rest, like, you missed it and you're calling on me over here. And, you know, I mean, like his sixth foul against the Spurs, there was a whole play where like everyone was colliding and smacking and hitting and everything, and then Fox reached in, like, it was a legit foul. Brown shouldn't have challenged it, but it was such a stupid call from the refs after what they just allowed.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, you called that one? Like, so I get where the Kings players are coming from with the frustration, but like, there are times when Sabonis is like getting kind of histrionic, and I'm like, eh, like, chill out. Like, I love everything about the guy, but there's times I'm like, do slightly less.
You all heard it here first. Greg hates Sabonis and thinks he's a drama queen.
Exactly.
And thinks he's like Luka and like ripping off the jersey kind of thing in frustration.
Well, are there any other topics we've missed that we want to make sure we touch on before we wrap up this week's episode?
I will say, hey, we had a game where we won two challenges. Like,
yes.
I don't know if we'll ever see it again. But you know what? If you win two in a game, you should automatically get a third. Like, if you have to correct two of their calls and you get it right, you should be automatically awarded a third. Like, just plain and simple.
I mean they just changed it to where you got a second. I mean, that's just this year, right?
Yeah. Well, because that was last year. We're like, if you get it right, like, you kind of like football, you should get another one. But I still say if you get two correct, hey, that's not our problem.
You're awarded with a third. We're fixing
you. You know, that is. And if you miss the second one, you don't get the third. But if you make it, you know, and it's, you get one in the fourth quarter or like something, because you shouldn't be penalized because you corrected them twice and then not have one in the fourth quarter. That's just kind of, yeah.
If you get your second one correct, then it's shoot till you miss. You know, I mean, you just have carte blanche, right?
I just think you should have one available in the fourth. Like, if you get it right, that it's twice, automatic one in the fourth, that you shouldn't have to be like, I got it right the first time, but should I hold it when I know this one is, you know, really right, but I need to save it in case I need it the last 30 seconds? Like again, you're penalizing teams and having to wait on it, because really a 2-point swing in the third quarter can mean just as much, you know, or something happening there. A 5-point swing can change a game. Like, we know the momentum, things like that, that it's, you know, that's the one part I don't like. I get why they do it, but get one in the fourth if you got it right twice.
Yeah. The only downside,
if you're willing to risk it, if you think it's important enough to risk it and you get it right.
Yeah. The only downside is that it would delay games, stretch them out longer, more 10-minute reviews for something that's obvious on one replay.
That's the NBA's problem, because we watch these reviews and we know in seconds, and they have a whole, give it to New York to make the decision then, right? Like, if that's the thing, because they're watching the same stuff we are and have a lot more eyes on it. If they wanted it quicker, they can make it quicker. But I think they also do that for a reason, so that for these kind of conversations.
All right, so that's going to do it for this episode of Living the Beam. Thanks, as always, for joining us, and thank you to Jill and TJ. If you like what you heard, give us a subscribe on wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can also find us all at kingsherald.com. And you can also support us on Patreon, as we are fully independent and reliant on support from viewers like you. We're like PBS, but just, you know, more Kings and less education. So until next time, thanks for listening.